All right, guys. So we have a really fun guest today, Derek Sivers, who you may have known from the company CD Baby that he created. But I first heard about him through the 4-Hour Workweek and Tim Ferriss. I believe his work was profiled in the book or through the movement because he created accidentally this company CD Baby in I think 1998, and it's turned into the largest seller of independent music online. And I think it's done, what, $100 million in sales and for like 150,000 musicians, at least at the point when I read that statistic. I'm guessing it's grown since then. But what's neat is that Derek, in 2008, sold this company for $22 million. But the kicker is he decided to create a charitable trust and give it all to music education. So this guy does things totally differently. And that's what I love about the things I've read about him and the things I've learned from him. I mean, he's a frequent TED speaker, and I've watched at least 3 of his videos that are hilarious and very powerful with millions of views. And then also has a published book that's been number one in all kinds of categories. And he lives in Singapore, but also he'll have to tell us, but he just came back from the most whirlwind trip to do a bunch of speaking and things. So I thought this is going to be a fun way to talk about the idea of shyness and introversion. Because my buddy Leo Babauta over tea told me, Derek is the guy to talk to about how to deal with your fears and how to just do the things that you don't think you can do. I mean, this guy's been a circus clown to combat stage fright, all kinds of things. So we're going to get into it. It's going to be fun. But Derek, thank you for being here.
Cool, Scott. Thanks for the great intro too. That was fun.
Oh yeah. Well, your story is pretty amazing. Oh, to add to the whole 4-Hour Workweek idea, the rumor was that you had your business so well systematized and automated that you were running it in under what, like 4 hours every like few months or something. Is that actually true?
Yeah, by the time it was when I read the 4-Hour Workweek, I was living in London. My business was back in Portland, Oregon, with 85 employees and thousands of orders per day. But I was just living at a friend's place in London for a year, just programming. And I would check in, and I think my actual time spent on CD Baby, on the management of it, was probably like, let's say like an hour a week tops, you know. And for the most part, I was just doing all the programming of new stuff. And it was fun when I read the 4-Hour Workweek, just sitting there nodding my head like, yep, that's my life.
That is unbelievable. So you were living the 4-Hour Workweek long before the book got published, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that is incredible. I mean, just your story of how you built that and what happened before that. I kind of maybe want to start from before then, because I know you have this obsession with doing the things that scare you. And a lot of our the people in our course and who are looking to connect and meet these different people get kind of shy, or they're introverted, they're scared to reach out and say hello. And I know that's something that holds a lot of people up. So I'd like to kind of have the theme of our conversation be this idea of doing things that scare you, and let's kind of just take it wherever it goes. But maybe we could start with the beginning, with the circus, with, I don't know.
Sure. Well, let's start with directly with that kind of motto of whatever scares you, go do it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 2 slogans. One is whatever scares you, go do it. The other one is a Kurt Vonnegut quote from one of his books that said, you are whatever you pretend to be.
Hmm.
And those 2 slogans I kind of kept in my mental pocket since I was a teenager for easy recall. And I think whatever scares you, I do it. I don't know who came up with that or if I came up with it or something. But ever since as a teenager, I just decided, like, this is a good way to live. That whenever you notice that something is scaring you, that's a sign that this is something you should do.
Hmm.
Because the worst thing you could ever have in life is boredom, right?
Right.
That you want to do whatever excites you in life. It's a kind of a sign of enthusiasm. And I believe that fear is actually a form of excitement. I mean, think about the way that fear feels, right? You kind of, it gives you this adrenaline and kind of like, you quiver, you shake or whatever. That's energy, right?
Right.
The worst thing is just to be living some lethargic life. Like, yeah, I've been working at this job for 9 years. Same old shit. So I decided that whenever I felt even the slightest hint of fear, that like terrified feeling, that I would honor it, go for it, and use that as a compass to guide my actions, right? So on the smallest level, it would be like, you see some gorgeous girl across the room that is just way out of your league, and you're like, whoa, I'm scared to even talk to her. And it's like, well, okay, I'm scared, here I go. You know, it's just like, you can make these decisions that fast. It's like, right, as soon as you notice that you're scared of something, that means it's time to go do it. And it really works to your favor, because the point is, every time you do something that scares you, you realize it wasn't that scary, and now you're no longer scared of it. So you get to like go through life getting rid of all of your fears.
Right.
I think it's a wonderful roadmap for life, you know? So on the bigger level, it means like, you know, I'm scared to move to New York City. I don't know anybody. Or I'm scared to contact Rolling Stone magazine to see if they'll write about my music. I'm scared to move to Singapore, you know, whatever it may be. I'm scared to get married. You know, what, everybody's got these things. I just think that when you're scared to do something, it's a great sign you should do it.
Wow. So I mean, I can only imagine the experiences that motto lends itself to. I wonder, on the other side, though, I mean, does that mean you're living your life in fear the whole time? Or how do you?
No, it's actually, it just gives you more and more confidence every time. Because you just start building up this history of doing things that scare you and then realizing they weren't that scary. So it's like your self-image, your self-definition keeps expanding and growing stronger and stronger. It's like, I can handle that. I can handle this. And, you know, scuba diving? Sure. Going off, moving to a foreign country, not knowing anybody? Sure. You know, because you start to just have this history that you can pull on in your past of knowing that every time you went and did something that scared you, it turned out great.
Right. God, and I guess you're starting on such a small scale where if it's just going up and saying hi to somebody, and then that parlays into moving to Singapore. I mean, over time, I guess you build up this confidence, right?
And right, exactly. That. Yeah.
Wow.
yeah, I'm a very confident person now because I've been doing this my whole life. And it was funny, you know, about 5 years ago, I was single for the first time, kind of in my whole life. I was one of those guys in like long back-to-back relationships, yep, ever since I was a teenager. So all of a sudden, at the age of 36, I was single for the first time in my life. I was like, whoa, wow. I'm going to go dating. Wow. And I'd never really done that. And it was funny when I was out there dating and meeting so many people and just like going for it entirely and going for sheer quantity just to kind of like get used to it. I would go out with like 5 different people per week and sometimes 2 people per night. And everybody would just say, God, you're so confident, you know, what's up with that? And it was actually a really like a low point in my life. Like I had been married. I got divorced. She like got everything I'd ever earned in my life. Yeah. She got in the divorce and not only that, but it's like my apartment in Portland was under construction, so I was sleeping on a couch at the office, but my employees and I were fighting, and it was like, it was kind of this low point in my life, but I'm just like such a confident mofo that I just had this swagger, and I just remember people would say like, God, you're so confident. I'm like, you know what, sometimes my confidence is all I've got, you know, when like nothing else is working for you, you just still got this swagger that you know you can handle anything because your whole life you kept throwing yourself into scary situations and pulling out just fine.
Right. God, I mean, people can feel that too. Like, I mean, going up and talking to, let's say, a woman at a bar, they can feel it if you're walking up confident or if you're walking up with your tail between your legs.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we could talk about the difference between confident and cocky. You don't want to be an ass.
Right.
It's almost like it's not believing that others are below you. You know, I think that's the distinction. You can be confident and think that you're awesome. It doesn't mean that you think that other people are not or that you're above anybody. It's just that you think everybody's awesome, including you. Mm-hmm. So that's the next thing I wanted to talk about shyness, is this thing that I think I used to be so damn intimidated by the beautiful people, right? Mm. Like just the people you just see, like, occasionally that are just stunning, just like so out of your league, they just feel otherworldly and whatnot.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is getting to know them and finding out that they're just a mess like everyone else. And it's almost like within 3 minutes of talking, sometimes the physical beauty kind of disappears behind the awkward, insecure, or nasty, or whatever person that they really are.
Yeah.
And it's really, again, it's like you do that enough and it becomes very unintimidating. Because then all of a sudden it's like you see somebody who's absolutely gorgeous, and for the first second you think, oh my God, out of my league. Then you go, wait, hold on. No, she's probably just as messed up as everyone else, you know, because everybody else is too. So the same thing goes for famous and successful people.
Hmm.
This is another level that, as CD Baby got really successful, and me being like the founder and owner of it, all of a sudden I was kind of a playa in the music business.
Yeah.
And people that I thought were out of my league kind of status-wise all of a sudden wanted to be friends with me.
Hmm.
And I got to know people that were my heroes and found out that a lot of them were also just messed up people that had some little circumstances in life that made them famous, but they're just the same, you know, messed up person like anybody else, including, yeah, even living in LA for 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
I got to be friends with some movie stars that were like kind of people that I would go see any movie they were in because I just loved everything they did.
Yeah.
And now, like 5 years later, they're friends of mine. And you get to know them and like, yeah, they're just messed up people too. Sometimes even more messed up than the average person because of their background and circumstances. So after a while, you just, nobody's intimidating anymore. You know, if you just have enough of these experiences. So,
it sounds like you kind of adopt this belief that people are people and that it doesn't matter what title, what they look like. I mean, it's like, we're all the same, and if you know that and believe it, you can probably, you know, relate pretty quickly to whoever you talk to.
Yeah, and another thing that really helps, I learned this a little too early. this thing I'm about to say,
okay.
Sorry, is that I was an aspiring musician back in the mid '90s. I went off to a music business conference in Vegas, and there were all these intimidating people up on the panels, you know, it's like these music conferences where they get all the top executives from the record labels and all the people that you so want to impress to like, just thank God, if I could just get my music to that person and they just liked it, my whole career would be all set. And just so intimidating. It's this huge kind of us versus them feeling, right? It's like there's the unwashed masses of musicians who are there with their little CDs in hand, just hoping to get the attention of the record label executives. And then it's like them, the executives that know that everybody there wants their attention. And so I would be there with the musicians in the panel, kind of listening to every word the executives would say and writing down their names and trying to remember this and making sure to do my follow-up contact afterwards.
Yeah.
And then it was like break time, and they were said, okay, we're all going out to take lunch for an hour and a half out by the poolside, go grab some shrimp and be back here in an hour and a half. So I went out to the pool, stuck my feet in the water while eating my lunch, and just happened to be sitting next to some redhead dude that asked me something about, like, he was talking to a friend to his left, then he turned to my right and said, okay, you help settle this dispute, you know, how did you discover your first favorite artist? Was it because of a live show or whatever? And so we just started talking. And for 45 minutes, we were just sitting there talking about music and girls and this and bands and whatnot. And then it was time for him to go. And he said, oh, dude, I got to take off. You're cool. Here's my card. Let's keep in touch. And it was like the vice president of PolyGram Records or something like that. This guy, you know, that if I would have known that he was one of them, one of those guys I was trying to reach and had him up on this pedestal, if I would have known it was somebody like that, I would have been completely intimidated and nervous because I didn't know that he was one of those guys. I was totally cool and casual and not trying to pitch him or anything like that.
Right.
And the funny thing is, I just remembered there's more to that would have been all to the, there is to the story. The moral of the story is, you know, it's all just made up in your head, this thing about putting people on pedestals because they're just the same old people. And I just realized there's one last kind of like PS denouement to the story is that he and I are still friends to this day. And in fact, when CD Baby, was getting going a few years after that feet in the pool day. He started sending me some of his biggest clients because we were just friends. And Jack Johnson, for example, was exclusive on CD Baby for many years because of this guy. Like he told Jack, like Jack came into his office with this brand new CD, and he said, "You know what, my buddy Derek at CD Baby, you should go with him exclusively. He'll take care of you." And all this because of, you know, dipping your feet in the pool and talking to a stranger in a casual way, not an intimidated, pitching, nervous kind of way.
Right. God, it's tough to pretend like you don't know someone's well known when you're talking to them. But I guess ideally you talk to them as if they were any other person that you randomly meet.
Yeah. And so now let's get onto that last slogan I wanted to remember to talk about, the Kurt Vonnegut quote, "You are whatever you pretend to be."
Yes.
That's another one that hit me strong, mainly because of this introvert extrovert thing that, I love anything, being alone, just solitude is my favorite game or whatever. I just love being alone, and being around people, exhausts me pretty fast. I can turn on the energy for a short period, and I can fake it for a short period. That's what I love about this quote: "You are whatever you pretend to be." So, as far as the outside world's concerned, if you're acting like an extrovert, even for like 45 minutes, as far as they're concerned, you are. You know that if you're pretending to be something long enough, then as far as anyone else is concerned, that's what you are. So, as I started going to music conferences to promote my music, I just learned to kind of, all right, summon my strength. I'd leave my comfortable little hotel room. I'd go into the conference room with all these people, and I'd be like, okay, here I go. And I would just turn it on. And you can just learn these techniques. You can read books like How to Win Friends and Influence People, or any of these books about like how to talk to people, how to get people to like you. There's all these books about techniques that are really, they may have slimy sounding titles, but for the most part, I've found that these books are about how to be considerate, right? That a lot of them are about reminding you that it's all about asking questions and being interested in other people, not just talking about yourself. I think that a lot of people get nervous about social situations where they think they need to be self-promotional because they think it's all about talking about themselves. But the magic revelation is realizing that it's not. It's all about being interested in other people and talking with them about them. So if you just keep a dozen questions in your pocket that you can pull out at any given time, or just pay close attention when people are talking, listen for these little conversational fish hooks, I call them. Like when somebody's talking about like, growing up, I was never into that kind of whatever. And you say, oh, where did you grow up? And then they talk about something. And they say, well, you know, we moved around a lot because I mostly grew up in Chicago. And you say, oh, well, why did you move around a lot? And you just start to learn to listen closely to what people are saying and ask for more details about the things that they mention. And pretty soon you're having a long conversation with somebody and they now think that you're a fascinating conversationalist and don't need to talk about yourself at all, unless they ask questions. And then even then, it's this technique of kind of remembering to turn it back on them pretty soon. Like, so if somebody says, why do you live in Singapore? You could say, oh, you know, I moved there for work. Well, why do you ask? Are you interested in Singapore? You know, you can turn it back on somebody pretty fast. And these techniques really help somebody who's a natural introvert get by and realize this kind of you are whatever you pretended to be, that pretty soon everybody thinks you're a great conversationalist and assumes that you're just a real people person and whatnot. When in fact, if you can just keep that up for an hour or two, then you can retreat back to your hotel room and go, and have your silence.
Well, and you do that enough though, you will, you know, become a people person, right? I mean, you can't avoid it if you get more comfortable asking questions and, you know, having conversations.
You know, I'm just like recently admitting to myself is that even though, especially the last 4 years, the last 4 years is when I started to become more public. For 10 years before that, I was mostly just keeping my head down, working on CD Baby. And I do the occasional music conference, but it's really just the last 4 years is when I started blogging. I started speaking at the TED conference. I wrote my book. I moved to Singapore, which involved like hundreds of people wanting to meet up with me one-on-one. And I said yes to all of them. And just so the last 4 years have been extremely social for me. But funny thing is I'm married now, and my wife knows me quite well, of course. And what's funny is that every time I go do some social thing, some mentoring thing, or even like schedule 3 back-to-back meetings in one day or whatever, every time I come home and she's like, oh, hey, how was your day? How was your conference meeting? And I always go like, it's all right. And on the other hand, when I have those days where I intentionally schedule nothing at all, no phone, no nothing, and I just sit and program for 10 hours or write for 10 hours or just do my very like solitude creativity thing, I just come home just like full of energy. And she's like, how was your day? I'm like, it was awesome. I got this new programming thing done and I learned this and I figured out this JavaScript thing with the Ruby API and I got that and I got it working and this. And like, oh, it was so nice. I had such a great day. And so she started saying this, like, babe, why do you keep agreeing to do all of these conferences and meetups and meetings and everybody who wants to meet with you, you're saying yes to? Why do you keep doing this? Like, I don't know, because I feel like I'm supposed to. But I think that's what I was that's something I really wanted to mention here is like to not think that everybody needs to be an extrovert. It's not like everybody who's an introvert has some kind of problem that they need to get over.
Right.
It's amazing things in the world have come from those people that can sit alone in a room for hundreds of hours and make amazing things happen, like to create. They can sit down and program an entire web app from start to finish. Or think of the novelist's life, right? Like, where would the world be without any of these novels? And novels can't be created at parties. networking meetups or meetings or hanging out with friends. So many of the great creations of the world can only be made by having the focus to sit down and make something and not feel the pull or not resist the guilt of people asking you to hang out so much or whatever. It's just like saying no to a lot of that stuff and sitting down and doing your work. I think at the end is just as valuable or more valuable than all those people that are out there schmoozing and networking, shaking hands and getting business cards, right, following up, all that stuff. A lot of it means nothing. What really means everything is the tenacity to sit down and focus and create something.
Right.
I don't want the introverts listening to this to think that they need to go fix that and change it. You know, you can totally embrace it and run with it.
And I mean, there's a lot of value in that too. Even if you are around other people and you're an introvert, I mean, it turns out introverts listen probably better than anyone on the planet, you know, and they're there and more present. I totally agree with you on not seeing this as a problem. It's something to be embraced.
Yeah. I mean, we have our strengths and weaknesses, right? So, actually, let me even just get rid of the word weaknesses there, because that's the point. We all have our different strengths. So, mm-hmm. For example, when I sold CD Baby, everybody kind of expect the normal thing for somebody in my position to do would be to move to Silicon Valley and be an angel investor now and be all involved in a startup scene and the whole web 2.0, whatever, social media boom, and be in the middle of all this kind of angel startup, my Combinator type thing. But I did a little bit of that when I moved to Singapore, because there's a huge kind of a second Silicon Valley kind of feel to this place. Like, everybody's in a startup, everybody's doing something, and everybody's trying to like invent some new app or whatever that's going to be huge. And they really roped me in to meet with a lot of these startups and mentor them. And And I did it for a year and a half before finally being honest. It's like looking back, it felt very dishonest in a way that I was doing this for a year and a half, because my big admission to myself is that I don't actually care about other people's businesses. I really want to come down to it. I got lost in my own ideas, and that's what excites me. I'm just not that into other people's business. I like to mind my own business, as they say. And it's a really hard thing to admit when dozens of startups are asking for my feedback and my thoughts and my advice. So it's kind of with everything, I have to just kind of shrug going, I don't know. That's your business. So the point I'm getting at is that there are lots of people, especially in Silicon Valley right now, that are really, really into the whole startup tech scene. They're into this angel investing and incubators and hacker spaces and that whole thing. They're really into it. And so don't feel that you need to follow the crowd with this stuff, because especially if it's, you know, a follow the crowd type situation, if lots of people are into something and you're just not that into it, then lucky you, because there are people that are. So it's like by me just finally admitting that I'm just not into other businesses, it really frees me up and just feels so wonderfully honest and kind of invigorating to finally admit that and stop doing things that I don't love doing. So
sounds so simple, but I know how difficult that is to do things differently and just to know who you are at your core and act on that.
Right. Or even, let's say for startup entrepreneurs, almost everybody is told that they need to have a co-founder and they need to have an office, or how it's cool to be in an open workspace or be in a hacker space or whatever. But again, let's talk about this introvert thing, that maybe you just love to work alone, which people probably tell you is a bad thing. But again, look at every novelist or painter or sculptor that ever lived, that they work alone. And you can be an entrepreneur and work alone. You don't have to be a part of some scene and sit with everybody else. You don't even need to live in a city. You could be an amazing entrepreneur living in Guam.
Right.
On a hill with nobody else around. You know, it's you don't need to do things the way that everybody else is doing them, or you don't need to be social just because everybody else is.
Right. God, that's such a good point. So I don't want to take too much of your time. This is really good stuff. I want to dive into two other quick things. One is just, I remember reading something, I remember it was on Tim's site or what, but you talked about how your mission was to make people smile. And when you're running CD Baby and just in general, I wonder if you could maybe speak to that a little bit, because it sounds a lot like you talked about with the How to Win Friends and Influence People and that kind of thing. So what's the story with that mission?
That to me is more of a business philosophy. But okay. I think a lot of people look at a business plan or a business idea and they say, how can we make this make a lot of money? Or how can I really profit about this? Or how can we grow our user base? And I think that asking those kinds of questions distracts you from what you're really doing, meaning that stop thinking of users as a group, or stop thinking of a crowd. And remember that there's no such thing as a crowd. There's individuals. There are people. And every one of them is a person that is interacting with your business because it makes them happy in some way. It makes them happy because they saved some time, or makes them happy because you're selling them some cool thing that makes their bedroom look awesome or whatever. You know, it's like, let's not forget that the reason people open their wallets and pull out their credit card or cash to pay you, it's because you're doing something that makes them happy. So at CD Baby, I just made sure that everybody that worked for me knew that that was really mission number one, is make sure that everybody that interacts with us comes away happy, right? So even if we need to lose a little money, that's fine. The most important thing is that they walk away happy, because then they'll just remember a good interaction with us. They'll tell their friends we're a great company. Whereas I see so many companies doing this opposite thing of like this nickel and diming and squeezing every last little dollar out of you to try to maximize their profit. But everybody who walks away from dealing with that company just feels icky. It just feels like like they gouged me. They got every, like, yeah, they didn't leave any money on the table. They really got every dollar they could out of me. Icky feeling that you can't wait to not do business with them anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right. But it seems, yeah, go ahead.
Giving it that shortcut motto of just like, make sure that you're making everyone happy, or making people happy. It just keeps the focus on the person and remembering that that's what it really comes down to more than any of the numbers. The numbers are optimization details, but the real core is that making sure that you're making people happy.
Right.
You can.
I love that. So, I mean, it sounds like the people who do this consistently, like the way you're talking about, are really in it to help people. And I think the ones who are more talking just about how can we squeeze every dollar, they just see it as a transaction. I think if we get back to the point of helping people, and that's what these businesses are about, then it becomes pretty clear.
Yeah, exactly. Well put.
Okay, cool. So the last kind of story I'd love to hear from you as we kind of wrap things up is just this idea of your experience in the circus and why you did that and how that came about. Because it's so funny to read your bio and to hear like, yeah, I started CD Baby, sold it for $22 million. He was a circus clown or whatever it was. I don't know. Tell me how that came about. Was that to help you with shyness or meeting people, or what was the deal?
It was, I was going to Berklee School of Music in Boston, and the bass player in my band got a call from an agent one day asking if he would like to go up to Vermont and play guitar at a pig show and would get paid $50 to do it. And he was just like, hell no, that sounds lame. And I wanted to do it. I was like, hell yeah, $50. I was like, my first paying gig ever. Absolutely. So, it was a $38 round trip bus ticket to get there and do the gig. I didn't care. It's like this first paying gig ever. I was, 18 or 19 years old or something. 18. Yeah, I was 18. And, so I took this bus up to Vermont and I went off to a place I'd never been, and I grabbed my guitar and just walked around some pig show playing songs on my guitar. And afterwards, the agent called me up and said, hey, I heard you did a great job up there. So look, I've got this circus and the previous musician just quit and I'm looking for somebody else. So why don't you catch a bus out to Worcester, Massachusetts? And, we're doing an art opening this weekend. Come play for me there and I'll check you out in person. So and I'll pay you $50. I was like, yes, I submitted that too. And he liked my playing. He said, okay, great. So look, we've got 4 gigs a week. They pay about $75 per gig. Do you want to do it? I was like, hell yeah. let's see, 150. Oh my God, $300 a week playing music. Hell yeah. So that was it. I became the ringleader. What he didn't tell me is that I wasn't just the musician. I went there to my first gig or two. And after I did the show, they said, hey, look, the previous musician used to go out at the beginning of the show and kind of introduce the act. And, I said, oh, okay, cool. And they said, okay, if you just go out, just kind of do something like this, kind of go out and say, welcome to the show. I said, okay, great. And, then the next time they said, hey, the previous musician used to also close the show. Like at the end of every show, he'd go out there and he'd get everybody involved in this big sing-along thing, singing the theme song. Could you do that? And I'd say, sure. And then they said, the previous musician used to go out in between each and every act and kind of introduce the next act. I was like, oh my God. So I'm actually like the ringleader MC musician of the show. So if you were to go see the circus, you would have thought it was my show. Right. And I'm 18 years old. It was amazing performing experience, but it wasn't to overcome shyness or anything like that. It was more like, I want to be a professional musician in my life. And this is something that will move me towards that goal. It'll get me better at performing. And it did. I stayed with the circus for 10 years. I eventually started getting $300 per show and doing like 5 a week. And
nice.
It was the reason I was able to quit my job. But last time I had a job, meaning like a boss, was in 1992. I quit my last job and I've just been a full-time musician or entrepreneur ever since. And it's mostly because of the circus. So I stayed in the circus for 10 years, from 18 to 28. Toured all over constantly, like just basically lived out of hotel rooms for most of 10 years, did 1,000 shows and got really, really good at it.
Wow, that is insane. What a way to start, too. It seems like you just got in the habit of saying yes to everything that was remotely towards, you know, this dream you had, which is so powerful.
You know, I have this theory, you know, this comes back to you are whatever you pretend to be. That when somebody asks you if you can do something, and as you say, if it's related to your goal at all, if you just say yes and figure out how, right? So a couple years later, somebody said, hey, I need a jazz piano player for an art opening. Pays $200. Do you know anybody? And I said, I play jazz piano. I can do it. They're like, are you good? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I play jazz piano. Sure, I'd love to do it. $200, right? And I think I even talked them up to $300 or something. And I didn't know how to play piano. I like said yes to it, and I went home and practiced a lot and got some books. And
that's insane.
And then, but hey, you are whatever you pretend to be. That I did a gig, they were happy. I got $300 and got more gigs out of it. And so I updated my business card then to say, like, I put jazz piano on, among other things, on my business card. And yeah, people asked me if I could write music for a commercial. I was like, yeah, absolutely. I do it all the time. So I said, yeah. Got paid $10,000 to do some commercial thing for Nike in Europe or whatever. And I've never done music for a commercial before. I had no idea what I was doing. But, you know, you just say yes to everything and you are whatever you pretend to be.
Oh my God. I love the motto. And it reminds me of when I think I read an article of yours a while back where it was, I think the title was, it's either no or it's either hell yeah or no.
And hell yeah or no. That's a motto, especially for, to be clear, I think that the way I started out that article is saying, like, if you're too busy and,
right.
So I did get some pushback on that. Fair enough, from people that were like at the beginning of their career saying, well, no, there are some things that I need to do in my career that I'm not excited about doing, but I need to do. Mm. It's like, okay, fair enough. Like if you're at the beginning of your career and you're trying to make opportunities happen, then just, you know, say yes to everything. But I think more like if you've reached a certain level of success where people are, everybody's vying for your time, everybody's trying to get a piece of you, everybody wants to be here and there, that's when this hell yeah or no thing applies more than ever. Is that when you've got a lot going on, it's because when you're up and coming in your career, you say yes to everything because you want every opportunity possible. You get in the habit of saying yes to everything, but once you reach a certain level of success, that same strategy will bring you down.
You know? Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Certainly. Yeah. And that comes back to your kind of introvert realization of you not always need to do everything.
Exactly. And yeah. So at a certain point, after you've hit some success, you have to change your strategy and not say yes to everything because it'll kill you. Or it'll just kill you career-wise, you know, that you have to then be much more selective and say yes only to the things that feel like really like hell yeah, like, oh my God, that would be awesome. I would love to do that. That would be amazing. You say yes to those things and you say no to everything else. And doing that allows you to spend more time and deeper focus on the few things that you've said hell yeah to. And also it leaves room in your life so that when another hell yeah kind of opportunity comes up, you've got time to say yes to it.
Mm.
You know, said yes to a bunch of other stuff that you felt, you know, even 80% about. You wouldn't have time to say, to really throw yourself into the occasional 100%.
Right. You don't even give yourself a chance to do the things that really matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, hey, Derek, this stuff is gold, man. I love just these simple concepts of saying yes to these things and kind of acting the role until you live it and just doing things that scare you. I think if you do that on the smallest scale, it's no surprise that, you know, I look at the resume that you have and you've accomplished what you have. It's you know, incredible, but I think you had it coming.
Thank you.
What's
the years? I mean, come on, it's like I'm 43 now. So as time goes on, it just, you know, I have this theory that a lot of people are trying to do everything all at once. They say, oh, there's so many things I want to do. I don't know what to do because I want to do this. I want to be a programmer, but I also want to this, but I also want to travel the world, and I also this, but I also, you know. And I have this theory, you know what, like, life is long, and you can use the future. The future exists. So use it. Like, space yourself out. Do one thing for 5 years, and then a different thing for 3 years, and then a different thing for 7 years. And then you'll actually, like, in the course of a life, you will do everything you want to do. But if you try to do them all at once, you'll get nothing done. You'll sit there spazzing out.
Right. Pick one at a time. Oh, it's counterintuitive, I guess. But
yeah.
Wow. So I guess to close things out, can you just tell us where you've been in the last, you know, couple months? You just listed before we got on the call a number of places, just so people know.
Hey, listen, so Scott called me first right before we kind of like connected and hit record. And he said, how's it going? I said, well, we in the last 8 weeks or so, I said yes to a bunch of conferences in a row. And with wife and baby, we went to, let me remember that, New Zealand, Mongolia, Japan, U.S., Iceland, Ireland, UK, back to Singapore, then to Taiwan, India, Thailand, New Zealand again, and back to Singapore. And that whole trip that I just ended 12 hours ago. And I got back late last night, crashed hard, woke up this morning, did the call with Scott. So you know, I'm back from a few months on the road.
Wow. Well, yeah, just a typical couple months for you, right?
Yeah. Well, we like, decided to binge. It was kind of like a, let's say, a family decision. Like, let's just binge on the traveling all at once. Kids at an age where it's kind of, we can carry him around in a stroller and he's cool with that. But now we're going to cut back on the travel for a while. Well, yeah, it's been a whirlwind. It's been fun.
Well, it's even more of an honor to have you on the call, knowing that you just went through that and you still made time for this. So thank you. The people with us appreciate it more than you realize.
Well, and hey, last thing.
Yeah.
I make myself pretty wide open to email. Like usually like the kind of person that would sit and listen to this interview is my kind of person. So honestly, anybody that made it this far, send me an email to Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at sivers.org. That's SIVERS.org. And just send me an email and say hi. If you don't have any big, profound thing to say, that's fine. Just say hi. And it would be good to keep in touch, kind of like learning about what people are doing and where they're at and what they're working on. So anybody, send me an email and say hi.
That is unbelievably generous. Thank you for that. And hopefully people will take you up on it. And I guess your last or your current project, just so people know about it, it's muck work, right? That's, you're helping musicians do the dirty work so they can continue to create.
That's what I'm programming right now. It isn't launched yet. So honestly, I've been way too distracted saying yes to all this other stuff and speaking at conferences and all that. So honestly, like, I've hardly worked on muck work in the past year, but yes, that's my next thing.
Wow. Awesome. Well, we'll put links to all this stuff below the video, and it's a total honor, Derek. Thank you so much. It's an inspiration.
Cool. Thanks, Scott.
All right. Thank you.